Before we start, I wanted to let you know that this episode contains discussions around loss, grief, and dying. Please check the show notes for more details. Hello, I'm Penny Bell, and welcome to Discovering Dementia, the podcast that began when I first found out my mum had dementia. At the time, we didn't know what to expect, so mum and I started recording together, hoping that what we discovered might help you too. I'm not a dementia expert, just a daughter sharing what's happened to us.
You can always tell when people know because they don't talk to you about it very often, which is really annoying. And they can't help it because nobody knows what to say. That's why I think it's better that I just say it and then they don't have to worry about it. You know, they'll be sitting around there going, I wonder if we ought to say something. Well, we won't say anything, dear. No, I don't want that. I just say it.
This was my mum 7 years ago when she was diagnosed with dementia. She's never been one to shy away from discussing it. Her mission has always been to break the stigma around talking about it. She's always wanted to live life to the full. Living well with dementia is a phrase we often hear, and it's one my mum wholeheartedly believed in and embraced. She didn't change as a person the day she got her diagnosis. She could still do the things she enjoyed. As a talented musician and music teacher, she played the piano every day and sang in choirs. Over time, as her dementia slowly progressed, we learnt to adapt. So choir friends would organise her music for her. They'd collect her when she could no longer drive. But certainly in the beginning, dementia didn't stop mum living well, and I know that's true for so many others. Through this podcast, I've met lots of people who feel the same. If you look back over the episodes, you'll find amazing examples. Mum and I had certainly focused very firmly on being positive, even when things did become harder. So it's not surprising that the latest campaign from the Alzheimer's Society in the UK has divided opinion.
Mum first died on the 12th of May 2019 when she couldn't work out how to prepare a legendary roast anymore.
Called The Long Goodbye, it gives a very stark message that dementia is like a series of deaths. Or at least that's how it's perceived by the son in the video, who's shown giving a speech at his mother's wake. As her dementia progressed, he'd felt he'd said goodbye to a piece of her every time she lost the ability to do something. For someone living with dementia, especially in the early stages and as a carer, it may be hard to hear this. In the film, the Alzheimer's Society says it's there again and again for people when these losses happen, to offer support and advice. The ad appears to have generated much discussion on social media, with some comments suggesting that the film has made them angry and upset, especially after the work that's been done to try and stop the fear and stigma of dementia. I spoke to Marion Child, head of local services for the South of England's Alzheimer's Society, to find out why the campaign was launched.
So it is a difficult message. Dementia is a non-curable at the moment, progressive disease. And the long goodbye represents feedback that people have given us in terms of how the relationship with their loved one changes over time and that they lose things. So they begin to grieve the loss of a loved one before the person actually is gone. So you lose the relationship, you lose your idea of your future you would have had together, you lose things you did together. And it's about that long, drawn-out grief that can occur in a progressive disease like dementia.
The style icon of the Covington estate. Mum died as a fashionista. the day she couldn't get dressed into her colourful outfits.
This is a campaign that is specifically around awareness raising. What we've realised is there's only about 22% of the population that understand that one in three people may get dementia even. And there's only 37% that understand that dementia needs to be a priority. So for us as an organisation, we've got three arms. We've got our dementia support, dementia advice and guidance arm. We've got our campaigning arm and we've got our research arm. The campaigning arm is specifically around trying to influence decision makers. So politicians, people in responsibility of power around budgets and things like that, to really get them to take dementia seriously. So this campaign is really around bringing dementia and its challenges into the sort of fore and really trying to raise that pressure on people to actually create policies, create society that actually is going to make a difference for those people that are experiencing dementia, changing that public perception so that that changes the pressure on the policymakers and the decision makers so that dementia is seen as a priority and it gets the services and support that it deserves.
And you're right about it being controversial because obviously for many people, they're living well with dementia, supported by family or friends, people around them. Has that been difficult?
It has been difficult. We've had mixed responses, as you'd imagine, from a campaign like this. And a lot of the work that our dementia advisors do is about exactly that, about helping someone adapt to be able to live well or helping families enjoy lives in different ways and exploring what they can do and adapting the house so that people can retain their independence and things like that. So absolutely, we know that dementia is a very mixed experience. So I think when you're experiencing dementia, whether it's you experiencing it or whether it's a loved one, there's always joy, there's always laughter, there's always fun, there's always love, but there is also challenges. There is tears, there's frustration, and there's grief.
Everyone's story is different. Every experience of dementia is different. But as Marion says, it is a progressive disease. According to Alzheimer's Research UK, the leading cause of death across the UK in 2022 was dementia. As positive as Mum and I have been, in the last few years, I know how incredibly sad I have felt watching her find everyday tasks increasingly difficult. Her frustration is obvious, and more recently, she stopped playing the piano, something that I found especially hard to see. So perhaps this campaign resonates more for the people caring for those living with dementia in the later stages, who may feel those down days acutely when they remember how life used to be. I've been talking to two other carers from different parts of the UK to see how they felt. Each spent years supporting someone close to them living with dementia.
My name's Amy Chauhan. I'm from Coventry. I've got two brothers and I'm someone who's experienced the journey of a parent having dementia.
I'm Candy Morris. I met Stan in 1979 and we've lived together ever since until he went into a nursing home. We got married in 1985. Stan had a daughter before I met him. She's gorgeous. We've got three grandkids.
My dad's name was Bagel Singh Mandar. We are of the Sikh religion. He came into the UK in the late 60s as part of the regeneration programme and contributed towards building a UK economy again by doing various different jobs. He was a well-known figure in the community. Everybody loved him. Very funny, got on with everyone, you know, part of the Gurdwara community, which is our temple.
So Stan loved football. He played football, managed football teams, including in semi-pro leagues. He qualifies as an FA coach. He was an avid Manchester City fan. He just loved it. So our first date together were me driving him around so he could go and see players to join his football teams. They weren't romantic dates. They were professional dates for Stan, sort of thing. He loved it. He loved it.
Dad came from India, settled here, went back to India, got married with Mom. He did have us fairly late in life because he got married late. So we were quite young, really, when he had dementia. So I think from my mum's perspective, she was really glad that we were all at home, able to help her, really.
So Stan had some physical health problems for some time, and then he was diagnosed with multiple myeloma, which is a sort of blood cancer. And he had a stem cell transplant in 2014. So he'd been quite poorly physically. By that time, I'd taken early retirement, so I was at home with him. It took him a year or so to recover from his stem cell transplant. But then I noticed he couldn't remember our address, didn't recognise our home, couldn't drive his car properly, so I knew something was wrong, and it gradually got worse. But it took him 2 years and actually an Alzheimer's advert on telly to say, "Have I got that?" about dementia. And he agreed to go for a memory assessment, and we just took it from there.
Dad, he'd always tell us about his life in India, because he was of the partition generation when India and Pakistan separated, and you know, he went through that whole thing, and he'd always tell us about that. But he was forgetting names of the places and the people, which wasn't like him at all. But then just things like his toothbrush. One day I just remember him just standing there and he was just holding it, and it's almost like forgetting what to do with it. I had gone to the GP and I said, "How can someone overnight not know what a toothbrush is?" You know, something as simple as that. And then they sent him for a brain scan, and that's where they basically diagnosed vascular dementia.
Because of his symptoms, I'd already started telling our friends, because Stan is really sociable. So he had loads of friends, and they were so kind and rallied round and so on. But it took 2 years, really, before we could get a formal assessment. That wasn't the NHS's fault. It was enabling Stan to want to do it. So he's got mainly Alzheimer's. He's got a bit of vascular, so it's mixed. I was relieved because I knew now that I could start getting a proper assessment and support. And I think Stan was initially relieved because he knew he wasn't himself. And now he had something that he could call it.
It was a gradual thing, yeah. So it was over, I would say, about 3 years. It got worse and worse and worse. So we were managing the symptoms at the beginning because they weren't so, you know, severe, you know, him forgetting things. And, you know, we had to just say, "Lorna, this is what you do. This is your toothbrush, or here's your walking stick. This is what you use to support yourself." But it was when it got to where he couldn't recognise us, that's when it started getting more painful for us, because we weren't expecting that at all.
For the first couple of years after he was formally diagnosed, he was still quite chirpy. We always used to go to music tribute bands, and we still did. And we used to go to films. He loved doing things. He gradually stopped being interested in football, but he still went occasionally with our son-in-law up in Manchester to see Manchester City. So he still had a good life. And then I think lockdown really was difficult for both of us. By that time, he was getting more poorly and he didn't understand what was happening. He thought I was keeping him imprisoned. So that was a really difficult time.
as the disease started to progress, I said to Mom, we need to take him back to India if we can somehow, see if he can remember the place he was born. And it was a bit of a risk. We just took him back to his village where he was born in India just to try to remind him, and he just didn't have a clue. So that to me was really heartbreaking. You know, he would go back to India so often during his lifetime, and for him not to recognise his village and the people there, all the people from the village would come and say, hey, big girl, you're back. And he would just look at them blankly and or just think they were there to take something from him or attack him. And that was the worst thing, when he thought everybody was there to attack him. And it, for my mum, it was, she just burst into tears. So, yeah, that for me was another major period where I thought, this is just so heartbreaking.
For both Ami and Candy, there was a gradual change when the person they knew and loved began to be different from the one they had always known. But then came the bigger moments when they felt that sense of loss that Marion mentioned more acutely.
I think it got hard when he didn't recognise anyone or anything or himself, and he got aggressive. But before that, we were just kind of just dealing with it. He would call me Mom. He didn't know who my brothers were. He didn't know who his wife was. He just thought we were all strangers.
So initially, we lost going to things, having a little dance together, because he could no longer balance. We could no longer play cards and have a drink together because he couldn't remember how to play cards anymore, although he was a cribbage champion earlier. We lost things we could talk about. We lost experiences, shared experiences.
You know, it's really upsetting, and you have to have a moment where you do start crying. You feel really helpless. You're trying your best. And I had to keep telling myself, this is the disease. Yeah, he's there in physical form, but this is a disease that's taken over. Yeah, I think we started grieving from that point onwards. You feel helpless. This is your dad. This is your dad. And you really want to fix him. You want him to feel better. But there was no way of doing that, because it was only getting worse.
I think I knew I'd lost Stan from 2016-17. So he'd already stopped recognising me. He knew he liked me. He had no idea who I was. So his 70th birthday was in 2017. He had no idea it was his birthday. So in that sense, I'd already lost him, and that was... it was quite hard, but it also didn't matter, because even if he didn't know I was his wife, I knew he was my man. And I still know he's our man, even though he doesn't know who I am.
How did you cope at that time? You just held that thought, did you, and that helped you?
So when I first met Stan and we were together, with my career, I moved around the country for promotions and things, and Stan was my rock. So he'd give up his job, he'd go with me, bring the cats, he'd sort out the house move. He'd do the shopping, he'd do the cooking, he'd get himself a job until the next move. So I thought he'd done all this for me over the years, and now was my turn to do it for him.
So we had like some carers and some social workers that would come out. They would send other carers to us that could help dress him and, you know, maybe take some of that care element away from us. But he would lash out at everyone. That's what it got to. And we would have to keep apologising. And that's why we had to kind of do most of it ourselves. And, yeah, Mum didn't really feel like talking about it with anyone.
And how did it affect you, do you think, having to take on the full responsibility for his care between you?
It's nothing we were prepared for, but I think we were brought up with a mentality of, you know, you help out when you need to. And like I said, my dad's done so much for us. We would do the same back for him. And that's typical within our Indian community, or certainly in my family. You know, forget that I'm getting offered a job in London. That can wait. Right now, my dad needs me. And that's what kind of kept us going. Let's do the best we can for him. Generally, Stan was a sweetheart, but he could be quite aggressive when he didn't know what was going on, or he saw a bad man in the mirror, or he saw me as a bad person. I had carers in 3 times a week, and he was very unpredictable, so none of us knew whether they could do the showering and everything else or not. But it was still just great to have a little bit of support. So it was quite hard. I knew he would have to go to home eventually, but it happened sooner than I thought.
Stan developed hypoactive delirium, a sudden confusion that can have a big impact on the way a person behaves and functions, especially if they have dementia. Possible causes can include an infection or dehydration. For Stan, it made him more sleepy and less responsive. Candy was unable to do any personal care. He was too heavy for her to move him on her own, and she couldn't get him to eat or drink.
So eventually I called the paramedics. They took him to hospital, rehydrated him, gave him antibiotics, but they assessed him, NHS, and said he can't go home. It's not you, but he's not predictable. One person can't look after him. You can't organise carers in at a regular time because he'll cooperate or not, which is perfectly true. So he can't go home. It was the right thing to do for him.
Yeah.
And probably for me, actually, but yeah. He's happier there than he would have been at home. I've realised. I didn't realise it at first, but I do now. Because he's got people to watch and things going on and so on. Whereas at home, it was just me and the cats and his carer. So now I know it's the right thing.
Yeah, we were fully caring for him, but during the last month or so before he passed away, Mom had given up. She was very ill herself. You know, when you're just physically, mentally, you've got nothing left in you, and said, I can't do this anymore. And I remember her just crying and crying. I said, look, Mum, we'll find a care home. Don't worry. We've done this for as long as we can now. And then we did find this one in Coventry where they did have some other dementia patients. But when it got to the stage of trying to go through all the paperwork and sorting everything out, and I think Dad decided himself, you know what, I'm not going to go into a care home. So I'm going to go to God now. I'm going to leave you guys. You don't need to do that. That's the way I look at it anyway. It was just what it meant to be.
If there are others out there now in the same position as you were, what would you want them to know?
Definitely reach out to people. Don't be ashamed. And I'm talking more to the Asian community as well, because our mentality is, get on with it. Don't reach out or ask for help. Definitely ask help, because you're going to need it.
I'd want them to know that they should not try and deal with it on their own and seek support. There is nothing to be ashamed of. This happens. It's not their fault. It's not the person's fault. So however upset or angry you can feel about them at times, I felt angry with Stan at times, it's not their fault and it's not your fault. So seek help, seek support. Don't hide it away. Be open about it. help raise awareness, get people talking about it. It shouldn't be an embarrassing thing, which we felt a little bit back then, because just having to explain it to everyone and why he was reacting the way he was. I don't suffer alone. That's what we probably would have done differently. And maybe just having someone to talk to and understand and not just being in our little bubble. Yeah. And people like the Alzheimer's Society, definitely reach out for that. They offer you support all the way through, because you do lose them every day over little small things.
The experience of dementia for Mum and I has been a roller coaster ride. In the beginning, we had many good days, but 7 years on, things have changed considerably. I do understand some of the things Amy and Candy spoke about. I find it hard to see how different Mum is now. No longer living independently, finding communication difficult, not always knowing who I am. Perhaps describing it as her dying multiple times might be a step too far for me, but I do fully recognise the feelings of loss and grief, that although the essence of her is there, I can still see her personality and character, and we have some wonderful, powerful moments of connection. She's not the same person as she was. The Alzheimer's Society video is certainly a tough watch, but Marion Child from the Alzheimer's Society thinks it's delivering an important message.
I think if more people were talking about dementia as a serious issue, I think that would be one outcome. For us at Alzheimer's Society, we know that there is lots of people that are diagnosed with dementia and they don't reach out to charities like us or Dementia UK or other charities. They just don't reach out for support. So there's something about raising awareness of who's out there to support them. But it's also things like with the local authorities at the moment, a lot of them are in financial crisis. They're making decisions about which services they cut. And for me, dementia can't be one of those services they cut. So if one of the outcomes of this campaign is that people in decision-making roles see the devastation that dementia can cause and realise the importance of the services to those involved, that for me would be a good outcome if the services and the support that people get is seen as a priority. And I think, you know, for me, I think it's realising that what this campaign is doing is drawing attention to the balance perspective as opposed to historically, we as an organisation have also sort of tried to only focus on how well, how great and how nice dementia is, which of course doesn't actually encourage anyone in decision-making roles to make any difference to it. So I think we have to present this balanced picture of what dementia really is, and that includes talking about the difficult side of it.
I think he would have wanted us to remember the jolly, happy chappy that he was. And that was just a period in his life that, unfortunately, we had to go through, but that he wouldn't want us to dwell on it forever. Yes, talk about it, help others, raise awareness, do as much as you can. And there is so much more help these days.
I mean, you lose so much, but you have to hang on to the things that you shared. So I've got in my sitting room, I've got a portrait painted from a photo of Stan, an oil painting. And every morning when I go and watch the breakfast news, I go, "Hi, Stan," sort of thing. And although they may have gone in some ways, you can still hold on to them.
Thank you to Amy Chauhan and Candy Morris for sharing their stories, and to Marion Child from the Alzheimer's Society. Please check the show notes for links to where you can go for support. The Alzheimer's Society helpline can be reached by calling 0333 150 3456. And you can also look at the website at alzheimers.org.uk. Bye for now.